We're talking about a pair of bills that make it a felony to trespass on pipeline property or damage pipelines here in Wisconsin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Supporters say these bills are purely to discourage vandalism that damage or disrupt the delivery of what's pumping through these pipelines and to protect workers. But opponents say the bills could suppress legitimate protests like we saw with Standing Rock and the Dakota Access Pipeline in recent years. So are you following this legislation? Are you concerned about the ability to protest? And what about free speech? We're at 800-642-1234. Tina Van Zyl is environmental director for the Sacagan Chippewa community. Tina, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So the Sacagan Chippewa community put out this resolution yesterday opposing the felony trespassing bills, which do have bipartisan support in the state legislature and are headed to the governor's desk. What is your stance there?
Well, I would hope that he would veto it, because there's just no need for this bill at all.
Explain why there is no need for this bill. Where are you coming from?
Well, there's already law in place. If you're trespassing on private property, and so why add to it specifically for, and I'll quote this, owned, leased, or operated by energy providers. It's adding it to just specifically for them.
The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa have also voiced their opposition to this legislation. The Bad River Chippewa have a history of protesting the Enbridge pipeline that runs across their land. And last summer, the tribe filed a suit against the company Enbridge. If these trespass bills are made into law, how would they affect the Sacagan Chippewa in particular?
Well, for us, sometimes it's not just about us, because we're all one Ojibwe tribe. And so what affects one tribe could potentially affect all of us. So, but us specifically, we, as Ojibwe tribes, we have off-reservation hunt, fish, gather rights. And we could be on public land exercising our treaty rights. And unknowingly, we could be over a pipeline that, you can't see. And we could be charged with trespassing, a felony trespassing. And I don't think this just applies to Sacagan or Bad River. This applies to anybody. Like, and on Saturday, it's going to be the statewide hunting season, and they're going to be on public property. And what if they're on public property that is in one of these categories, whether it's a pipeline or energy, water? I mean, there's other definitions in there, and they could also be charged with trespass, a felony trespassing.
We had Representative Jason Fields, who is a Democrat from Milwaukee, who supports the bill. He was on our program last month. Let's listen to him explaining his view on this felony trespass legislation.
It's not a bill for protesting. You have the right to peaceably and lawfully protest. This bill is directed towards people who willfully and intentionally trespass and damage property or damage infrastructure.
Tina, what is your response to that? Field says this isn't about discouraging protesters.
I would disagree because the legislation, I feel, and many people feel, that it's very vague. And when it's very vague, things like what he's saying, that there's intent. Who determines the intent? Is it the energy provider? I mean, that's how I read it. And so this law isn't clear enough. And so if they actually wanted to do this, then maybe they should go back to work and make things clear. Or you know what? Just get rid of it, because it doesn't even need to be done.
We're talking with Tina Van Zyl, who is the environmental director for the Sacagan Chippewa community. We're looking at this legislation that is cracking down on trespassing on pipeline property. With your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Tina, Representative Fields also said on our program that this law would not penalize people for using their own land, but that's exactly what you've expressed concerns about. Can you help us understand where the tribe is coming from and your concerns about this vague language?
So, how I understand it, so with the pipeline property being under, say, Bad River, for instance, their tribal members are on federal trust land. The pipeline has an easement on their land, and they are freely on our reservations. That's somewhere where we consider our sanctuary. That's where we can freely hunt, fish, gather without worrying about being on anybody else's property because it's ours. But this law could potentially change things because with that corridor of the pipeline, is it now their property or is it federal trust property that's ours? See, that those are the things that aren't clear. And so you could have a tribal member freely being on their land. Maybe they're just gathering medicines. They're not there to harm or do anything to anyone, but they, if this law, it could be interpreted that because the pipeline has an easement, that maybe they're trespassing on their own land.
There's been similar legislation in states around the country concerning the conduct of protesters. What do you make of this?
Well, I feel that when people are driven to protest, it's because they feel they have no other choice. They probably have tried all the avenues that they are supposed to go through, and nobody is listening, nobody's responding, nobody's commenting. And so they feel like they have no other choice but to go to a location that maybe for, let's say, for instance, for us Native people, these are places that are often all we have, or they are sacred. And for instance, in Mole Lake, we have a battle here. And my ancestors fought for this place for us to have wild rice. They gave their lives. There's a mound here where they're buried. Now, if somebody were to do something on this reservation, at, for instance, the Crandon Mine, we would do whatever we needed to do, no matter whether there was legislation or not, because that is a part of our identity. That's something that we have to fight for because that is who we are as people. And so if people aren't listening through the chain that we have to go to, then sometimes that's the last choice, is to protest. And I feel like the reason this bill is there is it's a hidden way of trying to silence people. And when people are protesting, it gets in the news. And if it's in the news, people want to know why. And so we start talking and educating people. And when you start educating people why you're protesting, they usually, you know, they're listening, they're understanding, and they eventually sometimes support you.
Tina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tina Van Zyl is Environmental Director for the Sacagan Chippewa community. Coming up, we talk about an executive order addressing diversity, equity, and inclusion in state government. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.
We'll be right back.
You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about how Democratic lawmakers and the Evers administration are addressing discrimination in our state. Governor Evers signed an executive order this month creating the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion. The people who serve on this council will be advising the executive branch on ways to promote equality. So do you think there is equal opportunity for everyone to get involved with state government? Where do you see equity and inclusion at work in your state agency? We're at 800-642-1234. Sheila Stubbs is a Democratic state representative in the 77th Assembly District, including Madison. She's on the Dane County Board of Supervisors. Representative Stubbs, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Katie. I'm so excited to be here.
So what are some diversity and equity issues in Wisconsin state agencies that you see right now?
Well, first and foremost, I think that we have to acknowledge that racism exists and everything is not fair and equitable. We have to begin to think about who's burdened, who's benefiting, and who's not at the table when policies are being made. And so as I began to look across the state of Wisconsin, I look at all types of factors from unemployment to discrimination to poverty to education disparities, to criminal justice disparities. There are all facets of disparities from life to death, from infant mortality rates to mortality rates. It is just alarming. And I must say today that it is a call to action. It is a crisis in the state of Wisconsin.
A crisis that last week Governor Evers announced state employees would undergo additional training as part of his new executive order on diversity and equity. What would this new training look like?
Great. Thank you for asking. I think in order to really address initiatives to impact racial disparities, we need to look at implicit bias trainings. We need to look at explicit bias trainings. We need to look at biases overall. In order to address root causes that have led us to these disparities, we have to really talk about perceptions. And these trainings are important trainings because it gets us to recognize there is a problem. And many times people say, well, I didn't know. Is it really a problem? And here's reality. We have staggering statistics that are alarming within the state of Wisconsin. Do you know the state of Wisconsin is the absolute worst state to raise a black family in the country? Why is that? And why is that okay? Why shouldn't African Americans in this state not just live, but thrive? And that's where a part of these initiatives are going to address strategies. What strategies are missing? How do we have job retention? How do we have a diversity work pool? What are the barriers? What are the obstacles? What prevents us to really addressing these inequities that exist?
So what I'm hearing is not only confined to state agencies, you're looking straight across Wisconsin and certainly issues that hit home for many families across our state. The governor also announced this advisory council on equity and inclusion. What would the primary function of this council be?
Great. First and foremost, I really want to thank Governor Evers for taking the lead on these initiatives. As you can tell, our Lieutenant Governor Barnes spoke about this as he campaigned. He said, this is going to be an area that I'm going to focus on. And I really want to thank Joel Brennan, who is our DOA secretary, because all of this work is going to take place in the Department of Administration. Creating this new council, they're going to look at practices. They're going to look at policies. They're going to look at trainings. They're going to look at analyzing our data. What is that data telling us? Is it staggering? How do we move from a tipping point in the state of Wisconsin to a point where everyone is working and thriving? And I want to say this council is really, really critical. Not only is it going to be representatives from every state agency in the state of Wisconsin, it is also going to include four lawmakers, two Republicans, two Democrats. It's not just a black issue. It's not just a Democrat issue. It's a humane issue. It is a bipartisan issue. And I hope organizing this council really gets us to the point that we are addressing the inequities that exist, the systemic racism that exists, the oppression that exists.
Or at least get it on the table.
Got to talk about it. It's reality. Why aren't we facing reality? not everyone is given an opportunity, not all people of color.
Sheila Stubbs is a Democratic state representative in the 77th district of the state assembly, member of the Dane County Board of Supervisors. What do you think about Governor Evers' latest executive order calling for changes in how the state assesses issues of equity? Join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Representative, in January, Governor Evers signed an executive order banning discrimination. How is this executive order this month different from the one he signed in January?
They're working together. And, of course, we do not want anyone to discriminate. But a part of equity is fairness. We know for sure not everyone is given the same platform. So I'll give you an illustration. There are three people at three different levels, a short person, a medium height person, let's say 5'7". I'm 5 feet. And let's get someone who's 7 feet. We're all watching the same baseball game, but there's a fence in front of us. The 7 foot person can see the game clearly. The person that's 5 feet, seven, they're struggling a little bit, but they're looking through the pecs on the fence. Here I am, 5 feet. I can't see hardly anything. There are three things that we could do with that illustration to make sure all of us are given the same viewpoint. What do you think we can do? Well, you can give me a couple of boxes and I can stand on them and I can have the same viewpoint as that 7 footer. I can remove that fence, right? Or we all can get on the backs of this 7 footer and say, let's all have the same viewpoint. And that's what equity is saying. It's not fair. But we have to say that we know there are people that are just not given the same playing field. And Governor Evers have said clearly he does not believe in discrimination, not any of us that are electeds. And so we're going to make sure that we're all given that same viewpoint.
You're working with State Senator Lena Taylor, who introduced a complementary bill in the legislature. How will this bill in the Office of Equity and Inclusion, how will that enhance this executive order?
Absolutely. Well, it codifies. So they're working together. What Bill number 4063 does is three specific things. It creates the Office of Equity and Inclusion. It creates the Office of Equity and Inclusion Council. And it makes an appropriation. So there are five new full-time, so 1.0 positions in the Office of Equity and Inclusion. That's going to cost us from the year 2019 fiscal year to 2020, $347,700. For the Office of Equity and Inclusion that has new positions, so 1.0 full-time equity and inclusion specialists, right, are going to be a representative of every state agency. For all of those positions in the fiscal year 2020 to 2021, it's going to cost the state $615,000. And that's important because we do have to spend dollars where it's necessary. And as we collect this data, what are we going to do with it? Once we get it, what are we going to do? We have to look at best practices. We have to analyze the data. And we have to look at trends. And must I tell you, there's going to be a culture change. We're going to have some state employees saying, now that I have this information, what do? We have to continue to offer them trainings, meet them where they are in order to change the outcomes for the state of Wisconsin.
How do you see this Office of Equity and Inclusion working with so many agencies and trying to bring people together and also trying to instill a particular culture and thoughts in these different state agencies? That's a big undertaking.
Absolutely. Well, let's just be fair and honest and say we need equity plans. What this council is going to do is help create equity plans for every state agency. So this new equity specialist, they're one for every state agency. That person would be the catalyst or the champion for that state agency. They would make sure this equity plan is done, present it to this council. The council looks at every state agency equity plan. And then we're looking to see what are some of the barriers. For example, it could be diversifying the work pool all across the state. Well, what are we going to do? What are we doing for recruitment trends? What are we doing to maintain the little diversity that we might have? So the council is an extra eye. When I look at equity, it is a framework. This bill is strictly a framework to help us get to the outcomes that we have. I can say this from my work at Dane County, which I replicated that work at the state level. It's taken us years to get to these status, 40 years. But it's going to take us years to change those numbers. But let's not take as long as it did to get these staggering numbers.
Have you received support for the bill from your colleagues? What does that look like?
Absolutely. As of today, I know that I have over 25 colleagues that have signed on. Unfortunately, I do not have a Republican colleague yet. I have reached out. I have had some conversations. I'm very optimistic because, again, this is a bipartisan issue. This is an issue that we know people of color are not being treated the same as other people. And to know our stats exist from child poverty to education to incarceration. Do you know in the state of Wisconsin, we are one of the top five states that have the worst incarceration rate across the nation? Why are we always the worst? And how do we move from the worst to becoming better?
Representative, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Kate. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Sheila Stubbs is a Democratic state representative in the 77th Assembly District. We've been looking at equity and inclusion work and what that work looks like in state government. Coming up, we talk with stand-up comedian and Brooklyn-based writer Hari Kondabolu. That's ahead. He's in Wisconsin. We'll talk with him right here. News update is next on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And a note here about our coverage plans. The public hearings of the House impeachment inquiry into President Trump continue this morning. You can hear live coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're carrying it on our NPR News and Classical Music Network starting at 8 o'clock. The U.S. Ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, is one of several witnesses set to testify. So that's live coverage of the hearings beginning in about 25 minutes from now on the NPR News and Classical Music Network and online at WPR.org. But right now we're talking with stand-up comedian and filmmaker Hari Kondabolu, who says just because something is funny doesn't make it right. He's making audiences laugh in Wisconsin on a tour, starting tonight with stops in Eau Claire, Madison, and Milwaukee. He grew up in Queens, New York, son of Indian immigrants. He takes on thorny issues in his stand-up, race, immigration, war, some examples there. So have you seen Hari Kondabolu performing? What did you think of this show? What questions do you have about the work of a stand-up comic? We're at 800-642-1234. Hari Kondabolu is a stand-up comedian and writer based in Brooklyn, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hari, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me, Kate.
So you've been visiting our state to perform stand-up for a number of years now, going on a decade. What have you learned about our state from your visits here?
Well, I knew when I've come in the past that Scott Walker was a divisive issue, but that might be different now, obviously. Obviously, the cheese stuff, but I didn't really need to come to the state for that. I mean, selfishly, I will say that I've had amazing audiences. I feel like there's a certain open-mindedness and thoughtfulness in audiences, the willingness to hear someone, you know, present an argument and attempt to, like, make them laugh. And so that kind of generosity is something that keeps bringing me back.
Oh, they'll hear you out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing about performing, especially in comedy clubs, is that, like, the audience, there's an expectation sometimes of joke, joke, joke. And that's not the kind of comedian I am. Like, I kind of tell stories. I'm a little longer form. It's not that I don't have jokes, but it's just kind of like a different tradition of stand-up. You know, my influences are, you know, maybe more of the storytellers. And so...
Yeah, you take on the cool professor type.
I think, yeah, yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I think that's about right. I'm like, I'm hoping that it doesn't feel like a lecture. I mean, that's the goal because it's supposed to be a comedy show. And if I fail to make people laugh, then, you know, I'm not doing my job. But yeah, I definitely find it like, I don't let it restrict me if someone, you know, the idea is like, the audience will be able to relate to the material. And I feel like human beings are able to relate to each other even if they don't have the exact same personal experiences. And that's what makes it interesting. So if you have an audience that's willing to pay attention, even if they don't immediately connect with the material, that's great because that means they're going to figure it out and I will explain it and set it up. And that expectation of, like, it has to be funny just for me right now, I feel that a little less when I'm here, and I really appreciate it.
A couple years ago, one of your fans encouraged you to visit Milwaukee by tweeting this: "People might think you work at a gas station, but we have bars everywhere and great food." Were they right about people treating you like a stereotype?
No, not at all. I'm surprised to hear that. But I'll keep in mind, I was only, the times I'm in Milwaukee, it's really like a number of hours. I'm sleeping for a good chunk of those. So, my interactions are mainly like, coffee shop. Maybe I'll stop at a bookstore, like the caricature of a public radio listener, and then I'll do the show. I haven't really dealt with much of that. I know Milwaukee has lots of problems, and this, obviously the segregation within the city is a big issue, as is everywhere police brutality. But I haven't dealt with anything that in terms of both my audience or in terms of people, graduate. But I mean, at the same time, like I wouldn't expect it. I don't think that cities are caricatures of what people say they are. Do you know what I mean? Like. Maybe if I'd been there longer and I'd grown up there, my experience would have been different. But it wasn't like this immediate, Indian guy's here, go get him. Like, it wasn't anything like that.
Well, let's dive deeper a bit then on race and stereotypes, because you did perform here after the 2012 mass shooting at the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, the suburb of Milwaukee. And this tragedy stirred a lot of conversations about race. Have you noticed any changes over time in how people react to your performances and in your material on stage?
Sure. I mean, it's kind of strange, particularly since the Trump election. It feels a little different. I feel, in addition to like time passing and there being more mass media with diverse voices, I feel like people are more willing to listen to me now than ever before. They have an open mind when they come to watch me perform. Also, I think some of the things that seemed super progressive that I was saying or, 15 years ago now are more in the conversation when we talk about whether it's gay rights or the rights of transgendered people. Like, these are all things that all of a sudden require less explanation or in the public narrative. And so that's extremely, exciting as a performer, because that means I can just get to the jokes, in terms of like negative stuff. One thing that has been interesting is since the Trump election, the people that don't like the stuff, like sometimes they just yell out the word Trump. Like, I was in Ann Arbor, which is supposed to be this incredibly liberal place, and the shows were fantastic. But in the middle of one of my shows, a guy stood up and he yelled, "Hail Trump."
What did you do?
Well, I'm a comic, so I destroyed him. I verbally said lots of things. I think there's a clip of it online somewhere, but I basically tore him apart. And, I had the numbers too, since it is Ann Arbor, so that always makes the things a little easier. But yeah, I mean, that happens. But I think it is weird that the people that don't like things can just yell out the name of the president, and it's loaded. It's a loaded thing to say. But other than that, strangely enough, I feel like this presidency has activated a lot of people and has forced a lot of people to think about things they were uncomfortable about. And before, maybe when you discussed racism, people were like, "I don't want to hear it. We talk about it all the time." But when the president says something, you almost have to address it. When the president tweets something racist or sexist or homophobic or whatever it is, or says something ignorant, it brings this discourse into the public view that maybe in the past people would not be willing to discuss. But you kind of have to, because he said it, so someone has to address it.
We're talking with Hari Kondabolu. He's a stand-up comedian, writer based in Brooklyn. He has 7 shows in Wisconsin today through Sunday, with stops in Eau Claire, Madison, and Milwaukee. You can join in. What questions do you have about the work of a stand-up comic? Who are some of your favorite stand-up comedians? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Michael now in Appleton. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question, I guess, and I thought of 2 other small ones on the wait for the call. But my primary question is, Hari, I like to think I'm a funny person, and I think my friends agree, or if they're really good at lying, if they don't. But I've thought about the possibility of doing, like, getting started in stand-up for a number of years, but being in Appleton, I think there's 1 comedy club that's a dedicated comedy club, and then any other performers kind of go to the PAC to perform. I've seen Louis Black there a number of times. So I was just kind of wondering if you would have any kind of recommendations for, excuse me, someone who wanted to sort of try it out on a smaller scale or in a smaller environment like that.
Yeah, breaking in. Yeah. Michael, thanks.
Yeah, again, I love the fact that public radio listeners have sub-questions. It's always the best. first of all, small correction, it's Hurry, not Harry. Always try to do that. But I would say, first of all, Appleton, I've heard, I haven't performed there yet, but has a wonderful comedy club. And they have open mics at all comedy clubs. And I think you just have to go up there. You know, I know that sounds really basic, but, like, I think people are afraid of taking that first step. And once you go up there, you'll know if it feels good and if you want to do it again. You know, I would come prepared. I would do some writing. The time goes quicker than you think when you're up there. So, you know, I just think you need to develop a thicker skin when you're a stand-up comic. Like, failure is a good part of what you do. Like, when you're working out jokes, you know, like, I've done shows with, you know, famous comics and people who've just started, and when they're working on a new joke, everyone's the same for that moment because a new joke is terrifying. So, you know, take some solace in that. Like, at some point, we're all open miking and we're all afraid and we don't know where something is going and we hope we can talk our way out of it and end on a punchline. So,
and you weren't on a path to stand up comedian. You have a graduate degree in human rights from the London School of Economics, but these doors just kept opening for you, and you just kept going to auditions, as I understand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was also good. I mean, to be perfectly fair, I mean, it wasn't just things just opened up. Like, I was working for it. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess there was a secondary path to stand up while I was an immigrant rights organizer, and then I got my master's in human rights from London School of Economics, but you know, I believe that if you love art, why does it matter what else you do? You know, the great thing about performing in a scene in any city, any town, is that all your colleagues, they're not professional stand-ups for the most part. You know, they're people who have day jobs who love doing comedy, and there's a community around that. So for me, I was doing it because I love to do it. And
do you,
of course,
find activism in your art form?
I mean, I don't intend it to. I mean, I feel like that's a pitfall that a lot of performers could get into, that, like, you become an activist before the artist. And I feel like any activism you wanted out of the art then suffers. I think if you're genuine and honest and your point of view is clearly just not a didactic point but comes from a earnest place and maybe even a personal place, it's more effective anyway. But my job is not to teach people. My job is not to activate people. My job isn't to educate people. My job is to make them laugh, and in the most thoughtful way possible. And for me, with my ethos, in a way where I feel like I'm not punching down and hurting people with less power, and in a way that's, like, honest.
Mm. Talking with stand-up comedian Hurry Kondabolu about his craft and evolution in comedy. Has a stand-up comedian helped change your views on something? What made you challenge your own assumptions? What do you think about stand-up being a lens through which we can have conversations about race, about inequities? Join in, share your story, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Back in a moment with Hurry Kondabolu here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. We have a comedian, Hurry Kondabolu, with us as he tours several cities in Wisconsin. Post 9/11, he started to question his country on things like war, hate crimes, and deportation. And these issues, they tend to percolate in his comedy material. So who are some of your favorite stand-up comics? What questions do you have for Hurry Kondabolu? Be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Hurry stays with us from our Eau Claire studios, where he is on tour tonight. Hurry, I'd like to ask you about campus free speech as someone who performs at colleges and does deal with hecklers. Here in Wisconsin, lawmakers and the university leaders are considering policies that would require mandatory discipline, suspension, or expulsion for students who disrupt free speech. What do you make of that idea?
I think it's tricky, right? Because I feel like your right to protest is part of that free speech right. You know, maybe it's not part of free speech, but it's definitely one of your rights that you are able to have a public demonstration. And I do think that it's tricky because when you're saying you're disrupting someone's, where's the line there, right? Are we talking about an interruption? Are we talking about you know, a public official is speaking and there is chanting, there's a protest. Where are the lines? I feel like it gets very tricky. And I get it from both ends of it, right? Like it's supposed to be protecting both ends, but I kind of worry about any restrictions to free speech. I feel like you fight free speech with free speech and education.
Hmm. So curious, do you lean into the style of pseudo-academic cool professor more when you perform on college campuses? Or what do you do with that crowd?
I mean, it's tricky, right? Because there, a lot of the kids are 18 to 21 and they're still new to things. So it's not that there's – I think there's a lot of other comics who might say that like, there's political correctness on campus. But I think part of it is you have to remember they're 18 to 21. They're like figuring out the world. Like I don't think it's particularly fair to assume that they've had the same experiences that you've had living in New York for the past decade. Like you have to give them, you know, maybe it's a little bit more – some things, personal things have to be a little more basic. And when you talk about the world, you know, I think in some ways – they're better audiences because they're used to listening. I mean, that's what they do all day. Like they listen and, you know, getting them to laugh is a bonus. So, you know, I really still love performing on college campuses because they're like excited to hear different ideas and they're excited to discuss them later. And, you know, if they're used to listening all day to someone talk and share their opinions, at least I promise punchlines.
Do your audiences, do you think they come expecting your comedy to have the touches, the flourishes of current events like the impeachment inquiry? Or do you think they're looking for an escape from news and politics?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think they come for catharsis, I think, you know, especially if you're a person of color or someone who's dealt with oppression. I think that's one thing that I've known hearing from fans after shows that I've might have provided in the show. That's not the goal. The goal is laughter. You know, if I have a joke about the impeachment, I will. But at this point, it just feels like it's everywhere right now. Like news about the president is constant and there's always a new scandal. And I feel like, you know, to me, this isn't Trump-related stuff. Like a lot of the things we're dealing with were cracks. They were fissures that were there before the president got there. And so to me, let's talk about the bigger issues, right? Like racism didn't start 3 years ago. Right. Like the way we treat immigrants, deporting people, the way we, you know, children in cages, maybe that phenomenon of children in cages is new, but the principles behind it aren't and the attitudes behind aren't. So and yet somehow I try to make that funny, which I realize for you might I might have to remind listeners, I am a comedian. It is hard to make jokes about these things, but you try. And it's especially hard on public radio in the morning to find light moments when talking about children in cages. But yeah, but that is the goal.
A couple years ago, you stirred up a you know national conversation about stereotypes with your documentary, The Problem with Apu. And the film examined the longtime Simpsons character, Apu, and portrayals of Indian Americans in mass media. Have you seen changes in portrayals of Indian Americans going forward? What has Apu done for our country?
The latter question, I'll do the Apu question first. I mean, it's certainly a caricature. It's a stereotype of an Indian immigrant. I get the argument that, well, they're all stereotypes on The Simpsons. That's part of the show. And I get that. But I'm saying that like it's hard when you only had one representation for it to be a stereotype, when that represents everyone you know and your family. Like it's a really strange phenomenon. So I feel like, you know, it kind of put us on a weird footing to start our time in this country. But I will say now is a really exciting time, and not just in South Asian voices, but, you know, there's a much more diverse range of voices being heard and new stories being told. And it's a really exciting time. And a lot of that has to do with how, like, media works now. It's not just, like, two or three major networks. Like, there's content everywhere. And people want something that's either maybe tailored to what they're interested in, which some people would say is ridiculous. But, you know, that's what mainstream television was. It was tailored to the mainstream masses. So I think that's only fair. Or they want just something new and different, you know, and for any voice, and particularly selfishly as a South Asian voice, it's exciting because, again, as a comedian, I don't have to explain so much. My, like, similarities to other Americans, to other human beings, become a lot more apparent if you grow up with brown faces.
We're talking with comedian Hari Kondabolu. He has shows in Wisconsin today through Sunday with stops in Eau Claire, Madison, and Milwaukee. You can join in 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Kevin now in Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. I just want to give a big salute to one of my favorite comics, George Carlin, who opened up every topic to everybody and challenged everything they thought about and thought they knew. And his quote of the job of the comic is to find out where the line is for society and then to deliberately pole vault across it.
Oh, wow. Hari, what do you make of that?
I love George Carlin. I think he's still one of the most important, I wouldn't just say comedians, but public voices in American history. Also, you know, I love that quote. And he also had something recently where he talked about the idea of what is the point of punching down at the little guy, right? What is the point of punching down at people who have less power? That's not interesting. That's not brave. And, you know, I think he was saying that to Larry King many years ago, and I saw the clip recently, and it's like, you know, he really did see this holistic thing of finding the line, and you try to figure out where that is and force people into an area of discomfort and hopefully create laughter out of it. I mean, it's a sick game in a way to make people uncomfortable and try to find a way to get them to laugh. But at the same time, I think when you're in that space and you laugh from that place of discomfort, it means more. It's like, how did you pull the rabbit out of the hat that time? Like, I think that's part of it. And with Carlin, I love the fact that, like, he did see power dynamics in performing. It wasn't as simple as just, like, I tell jokes. It's like, I tell jokes, but at the same time, I'm also aware of my position and the position of the audience members and what that means.
And your mom is quite funny. I'm wondering, what does she think now that you are really, really engaged with these bigger, broader issues across our nation and still doing it in a funny way?
She's proud of me, but she's definitely scared. I mean, she sees the news. She knows what's been happening, especially to people of color in this country, particularly post-Trump with the increase in hate crimes. She knows also that I'm not afraid to say what I want and that I'll travel the country. Like, I'm not going to restrict myself to just the coastal elites. You know, to me, the job of the comedian is to travel and to meet different communities and to try to find a way to relate to them. And
does that make your material better when you do get
absolutely
out there?
Absolutely, because it means that the things that I take for granted that people will understand, you know, they might, you know, it forces me to find a way to explain it to them and to communicate it to them. And I think that helps overall. Like, I don't know much about Eau Claire, you know, and I'm have to perform there tonight, and I'm excited
you'll be
about
learning.
It. Yeah, but that's part of it. Like, I have to learn. Like, you know, I'm in Madison Thursday to Saturday. I've been there, and I've been I'm going to be in Milwaukee on Sunday. Those are cities I'm more familiar with, and I think are part of the national conversation a bit more. But my job is to figure out how do I communicate this to the people of Eau Claire tonight, Bon Iver or whoever else shows up.
Well, Hari, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hari Kondabolu is a stand-up comedian and writer based in Brooklyn, as you heard, performing tonight in Eau Claire with shows in Madison and Milwaukee to follow. And he joined us from our studios in Eau Claire. Just ahead, we take a look at some of the most played songs of the year on Wisconsin jukeboxes. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.